And also last time we talked about
functions of two variables, two inputs, one output.
And the concept today is, how do we talk about derivatives when there's two inputs? You should think of the derivative as this ratio of changes. You change x a little bit, you change an input a little bit, how does the output change? Well, what do you do when there's two inputs?
Well, the idea is, okay, if we're going to start to understand such a function, let's just work with one input at a time. So
there's this funny symbol. This. So you should interpret it as the rate of change of f. F can depend on x and other variables, right? Rate of change of f with respect to x with all other inputs constant. Just change one thing at a time. See what think of this as the x slope of the function. So we have our power rule for the derivative of x to the nth power. Well, now imagine we had another input in there. Maybe we multiply it by y to the m. So you want to measure, how does this function change compared to a change in x, but with y held constant? And that's this little funny partial symbol. I just read it partial x to the m, y to the m, partial x. So think of it as just another derivative, but now you're treating the other input y as a constant. Well, if it's a constant, then at this point it's a constant multiple. So when you have a constant multiple, then you can just factor it out, derivative. What if we did something where we added them? Well, then you'd just be adding a constant. You take the derivative separately. So the derivative of this part with respect to x is just the usual thing you get from the power rule. And the derivative of y to the m with respect to x is zero, because we're holding the other input y constant, and the derivative of a constant is zero. Meanwhile, we could look at the other things. Thanks. Look at the derivative of this with respect to y, the partial derivative with respect to y. In this case, you're holding the x constant. So here I'm multiplying a power of x and a power of y, so the x for this derivative is just a constant multiple. I can factor it out of the derivative. I was adding them. Just now a derivative with respect to y. Holding the other input x constant this time. If you have a constant plus something, you do the derivative separately. The derivative of the constant is zero. This power, you have a derivative according to the power rule. So this is how we try to understand functions with multiple inputs. We look at rates of change for one variable at a time. With a function of three variables. And what if I had W is equal to, say, e to the x. E to the x times y plus x squared z plus y cubed times the log of z. So this is a function that has three inputs. So you can compute three partial derivatives. And if there's lots of other inputs, you hold them all constant. You're just changing one input at a time. So if you just treat y and z as constants and take the derivative with respect to x, then this works out just fine. The derivative of e to the x is e to the x. The y is a constant multiple. The derivative of x squared is 2x. The z is a constant multiple. Here, this is just a constant term. This derivative is 0. Want the y partial derivative, okay, then we just take the derivative with respect to y of all the other inputs as constant. In this case, the other inputs are x and z. So, okay, e to the x, well, that'll be just be a constant now. The derivative of y with respect to y is just 1. X and z are constants, so x squared times z is a constant term. So that has y derivative 0. And then here, the derivative of y cubed is 3y squared. And the log of z there is just a constant multiple. Take the z partial derivative. Now we have to hold x and y constant. Okay, so e to the x times y, that's all constant stuff. There's no z dependence there. So that's just a 0 term. Now the x squared is a constant multiple, and the derivative of z with respect to z is just 1. And now here the y cubed is a constant multiple, and the derivative of the log of z with respect to z is 1 over z.
questions or comments about this?
Here's a more complicated one. Let's say that this is a function on g of x, y, z. And maybe you have a variable symbol for the output. Sometimes you'll see both kinds of notations. You'll have a function symbol, and you'll have a symbol for the output of the function. And if you have that situation, then the notation, say this, partial w, partial x, and partial g, partial x, they all mean the same thing. Just take the derivative of this thing with respect to x, holding the y and z constant. Okay. So, what would be the x partial derivative of this thing? What rule will we have to use? It's a more complicated function, right? We've got a function here, and then we're taking the exponential of that. So we're chaining two functions together. So the y squared and the z, think of them as constants for this computation. If we had, say, if you had this, say, if y was 2 and z was 3, then w would be e to the, see, 2 squared times 3, 12 x cubed. And if you took the derivative of this, you would have to use the chain rule, right? And over here, you've got just the regular derivative of the exponential is the exponential, right? And then you have to multiply it by the cleanest way to write this. The exponential is its own derivative. We have the exponential again, and then here we have to multiply by the derivative of this, which is 12 times 3x squared. So we hopefully remember how to get this kind of derivative if it's just one variable. Now here, you do the exact same thing with an exponential. The only difference is instead of a 12, you've got a y squared z. And we use the little partial symbol to indicate we're holding the y squared z constant when we take our x derivative. So it works out exactly the same. So you
you have the y squared z as a constant multiple, then the derivative of x cubed is 3x squared.
Questions or comments?
I see some looks of confusion. What's your question?
So that part of the y squared. See, I didn't know how to get it apart.
How do I know how to get it apart?
No, how do we got that y squared? See.
Well, okay, right here. Here we're holding y and z as constants. Yeah. So you can factor out a constant multiple. That's, and then this will just be constant multiple. So f of xy can be the division function. Okay. And so we could ask, what is partial f partial x? What is partial f partial y at, say, xy equals 2 and 3? Okay. If you're given a particular point,
this case, we're taking the x partial derivative. So you're looking at changes. Right? If we make a tiny change dx, then but we don't change y at all. In this case, we're holding y at 3. If you make a tiny change in x, what is the corresponding change in f? Well, f will be x over 3.
One third. We take the y partial derivative. That's just the derivative with respect to y with x stuck at 2. Okay. If we're interested in just the derivative at the point 2, 3, then we know what we're holding x constant at 2. So this would be the derivative of 2 over y with respect to y. I would probably write that as a power rule. So 2 times the derivative of y to the negative 1 with respect to y. And now at y equals 3, this would be negative 2 times 3 to the negative 2, so I think that's going to work out to be negative 2 ninths, right? At y equals 3. An interpretation in terms of approximate changes. So let's say we have a little table here. So we have the division function, and I'm going to make a few changes. I'm going to think about over here, this will be y coordinates, so y is at 3, right? You can imagine bringing it up a teensy bit, bring it up to 3.01. And over here, x, we're thinking about it at 2.0. Okay, imagine bringing it up a little bit to 2.01, say. Now, okay, right here we have our two-thirds. So I guess that'll be 0.66666. If we compute the division function value in there. So two-thirds. And I've got my calculator here. Two divided by 3.01. You get 0.64451, etc. And then what over here? What if I'd have 2.01 divided by 3? I get exactly 0.67. Okay. That's just a coincidence because 201 is a multiple of 3. Now, if you compare these things, So for example, look at this one where we changed x a little bit.
Maybe a color would help.
We need red here. At this one. Okay. 0.67 minus 0.66 will be 0.033333. So we have this change. And if you compare that to the derivative here, the partial derivative with respect to x, you have 1/3. Times 0.01. Oh, I think I need another zero here, don't I? Yeah, 7 minus 6, yeah, that's not 3. 0.00333. So if you have 1/3 times 0.01, you get exactly the same thing. So what's going on here is that your change delta F is roughly partial F partial X times a change delta X, right? If delta Y is not changing at all, right? And of course you need, in general this only works well if delta is small. In this case it came out exactly true. You could also look at this one. Here, leave x alone, but change y a little bit. So you have 0.64451, etc., minus 0.6. And I have more decimal places on my calculator, so I'll do the subtraction there. And you get negative 0.002214, etc. Okay. Now compare this to the negative 2/9 that we got, partial derivative, times the 0.01. That's from the change in y here. And this is negative 0.002222. Okay, not exactly the same, but close. And so we have a situation where the change in F is roughly the partial derivative now with respect to Y times the change in Y. There's your partial derivative, there's your change in Y. In this case, if we're leaving x alone, and the change in y is small enough. So this is just, you can think of this as reviewing the interpretation of the derivative, except there's another variable in there that you have to remember to hold constant so you can have derivatives work like they did before. Now what's new is what if I put in here, what if I look at changing both of them? 2.01 divided by 3.01. I get 0.66777 4
0.
So this is something. What about changing both of them by a small amount? So I increase, in this example, I increased both x and y by 0.1. And you get 0.00110741, etc. Okay. Now, turns out if you change both x and y, there's a simple way to estimate the change of the output using partial derivatives. Just take this change. Think of this as, okay, this is change in f caused by changing x, and then this change is change in f caused by changing y, and just add them together. So take the 1/3 times the 0.01 plus the negative 2/9 times the 0.01. And I think that works out to 1/3 minus 2/9 is 3/9 minus 2/9. So that's 1/9. So 0.111111, but then times 0.01, so divide by 100, so 0.00111111. Okay. Again, not exactly the same, but close. And so we get what's called the linear approximation. There's a bunch of names for it. Maybe I'll make a list on another board here. But the point is, the change in delta f, delta f is the symbol for that change. When you have two inputs and you change both of them, you can approximate it as, okay, partial derivative times the change in the for that variable plus the other partial derivative times the change in that variable. So this is a new idea here. Estimate the change in the output caused by changes in two inputs. And the idea is, okay, we'll just take both partial derivatives and just add up the changes. Questions or comments about this? Okay. So the name for this idea here, it has several names. One thing it's called is a total differential.
And people use this then to estimate things. So, for example, you get what's called the linear approximation. Also called the tangent line approximation, tangent plane approximation, actually. Because they're thinking of it as being in 3D now, so instead of lines tangent to curves, you have planes tangent to curved surfaces. Whatever you want to call it. So say you have some function and you want to approximate it near a particular input point, right? Like here we approximated the division function, where we approximated changes in the division function near 2 and 3, right? So we got things a little bit different than 2/3. Okay, so we have to take the starting value, take f at this base point, right? Think of it as, okay, start here and then make little changes, okay? So we compute the value here, we compute 2/3 and then tack on one of our changes, but using the derivative approximation of it. So for example, I've chosen symbols A and B here. So we would take partial f partial x computed at the base point, right? Like I used partial derivatives computed at x equals 2 and y equals 3 here. So that's how I got the simple 1/3 and negative 2/9 partial derivatives. Right? So I use those partial derivatives at my base point right here, and then I multiplied them by changes in here. This was a change in x, this was a change in y. Okay, so if we go from an x value a to some other x value, which we just call x, well then the dx here will just become x minus a. So that's just the dx. How much are we changing x as we go from a to some other x value? And then we compute the y partial derivative at the base point. And then the change in y as we go from this base point y coordinate b to some other y coordinate that we just call y. That's the playing the role of dy. And so this all together is the df at the base point. So you take this total differential, as it's called. It's an approximate change in the output given some small changes in both inputs. And you compute that at your base point. Notice it also depends on your change dx and dy.
So,
some examples of this. I claim I can get a decent estimate of the cube root of 1001 over 63 without a calculator. So f of x comma y is going to be the cube root of x divided by y
We can go ahead and write that using power. So it's going to be x to the 1/3 times y to the negative 1/3. Okay. And I'm going to choose my base point to make this something I can do without a calculator. So I observe that the cube root of 1,000 over 64 is 10 over 4, which is 2.5. Okay, so yes, I memorized a few cubes there. Aside from that, I don't have any special knowledge of the numbers here. I just picked something that was close to some cube numbers. So I'm going to use that a base point of 1,064. Okay. And then this right here, this would be the value of the function at that base point. So then let's see what we can get here. Let's see. Okay, so my change in x is 1,001 minus 1,000, right? As we go from 1,000 to 1,001, we have to increase the x by 1. And then, what is dy? What's my change in y? So I go from the base point 64 to 63. Negative 1. Right? We're decreasing y, so that's a negative change. And then we need some partial derivatives here. Okay. So for the first partial derivative, I just use the power rule on the x part, and I'm holding the y constant when I take the x partial derivative. So this will just be a constant multiple. So this was just from the power rule. And this was a constant multiple. And we need to compute what this is at our base point. So 1/3, and then here we have 1,000, right, to the, so let me write this in terms of cube roots, that'll be a little easier, I think. Okay, so this is 1/3 times 1 over the square of the cube root of x. The fraction, a third there means a cube root, and then we're squaring it, that's the multiplication by 2, and then reciprocal, that's the negative sign of the power. And then here we have just the reciprocal of the cube root of y. And at x equals 1,000, well, the cube root of 1,000 is 10, and then square that, you get 100. And then with y at 64, okay, the cube root of that is 4. If you like, you can simplify that a little bit. It's going to be 1 over 1,200. I tried to pick numbers that weren't too hard because I wanted to do this without a calculator. Why partial derivative? Well, even if I try and squeeze it all on this board, I could try, but I'm not going to succeed. I already took pictures of the other board. I don't need to squeeze it. Yep. Let it grow onto the next board.
take the y partial derivative.
Okay, so
now we're going to hold x constant. And now we're going to use the power rule on y to the negative 1/3. So we're going to have negative 1/3 times, okay, negative 1/3 minus 1, right, is negative 4/3. Just like here, it was positive 1/3 minus 1 being negative 2/3. Negative 1/3 then times the cube root of x. This one would be then the reciprocal of the 4th power of the cube root of y. So we'll have negative 1/3. When you plug in 1,000 there, that'll make a cube root of 10. And then here, we'll have 1 over 4 to the 4th power. The cube root of y is 4. At y equals 64, right, at our base point. And, well, okay, not quite as nice a fractional one, but I believe the 4th power of 4 is 256. We're getting to the point where we're starting to wish we had a calculator. Okay. Fine. Okay. So put it all together. Use this formula. So we're going to have 2.5 as the base value of our funny function. 2.5 or 10/4 if you like. And then we're going to multiply by the derivative, the x partial derivative, that one. Times the dx, which is 1. And then we're going to have the y partial derivative, which got complicated on us so well. There's a negative there. So if you look at this, you can get an idea of how much does it change compared to the 2.5. Let's see here. So we've got the 2.5, and then we've got, okay, plus 1 over 1,200, which, I know that that's, I think, if I remember a 12th rate, it's going to be something like this. So. 1 over 1,000 is 0.001, so this is going to be like that. And then here, minus and minus, that'll make a positive. You can understand kind of why you should expect that, because as we decrease y from 64 to 63, we're making a denominator smaller, which makes the fraction bigger. So the change in y contributed to a positive change. I mean, it made a positive contribution to the change. I'm not sure how much I can simplify this thing, but t
10 over 768. Yeah. I don't know how much I want to do in my head here, but. Something like that. Right. You can get an idea of how much of a difference did it make to take the cube root of 1001 over 63 versus the cube root of 1000 over 64. This gives you an idea of the size of the change. You can see that the change in x from 1000 to 1001 mattered very little. At least compared to, say, the change in y, that caused a bigger effect. And if I ask my calculator about this, turns out the that looks to be about 2.514. I was making a little rounding here when I did the division here. My calculator says it's a little bit less than 0.14 actually, so I'm not sure if that's me rounding, some combination of me rounding a little bit too much and the fact that this is just a linear approximation, not the exact thing. But it's actually really, really close. My calculator believes that the exact value out to that many decimal places at least. Very, very close. If you make little changes in your inputs, then just like with the linear approximations, the things we did with differentials way back when in chapter 10, well, you can do the same kind of thing with a total differential. So if you have small changes even in multiple inputs, we can get a very good approximation of the output. Now, this isn't as exciting when you have a calculator, right? Because less trouble. If all you really wanted was the cube root of 1001 over 63, right, it's less trouble to just put that in your calculator. These kinds of things come up in situations where you need, say you're trying to do some computation really fast, and accuracy is not as important as speed. Now, this happens when you're doing, say, physics simulations for a video game or something. You have to compute lots of numbers to figure out the correct positions of everything that you're trying to visualize and how it moves. And you have to do lots and lots of computations over and over and over again really fast to simulate your little fake world. If you don't need things to be exact, right, because it's just a simulation, but you do want to keep up with the player and all the complexity of the game. And sometimes the trade-off is of, say, using a linear approximation instead of doing a more complicated thing like the calculator does to get the exact value. It can be worth it sometimes just to use the linear approximation. What the calculator does to get its exact value is, instead of a linear approximation, it's going to use something more sophisticated, like probably a polynomial approximation.
But that gets even more complicated. And because it's more complicated, it takes longer to do it, even for the calculator.
You don't notice it if you're just doing one problem. But if you had to compute a billion different square roots, you would notice that if you just did the linear approximations, those would a billion of those would go a lot faster on your computer than a billion more precise cube roots that went out to 12 decimal places or whatever. There are some practical applications of using these linear approximations, but that said, their main thing ends up being theoretical in that next time we're going to look at the idea of how do you optimize things when there's multiple inputs. Instead of finding the top of a curve, you want to find the top of a hill on a curved surface, or the bottom of a bowl. And the way people figured out how to do that was they were thinking about the total differential. And because we can understand the linear function and what should the linear approximation look like when you're at an optimum. And basically what it should look like is it should look like the partial derivative terms are flat. They should be zero to make the tangent plane flat. If these terms aren't zero, then by making a small change in dx or dy of the correct sign, you could increase or decrease the value of the function. Right? And flipping the sign of the dx or the dy, you could make the function increase or decrease. But if you're at a maximum or a minimum, then that's impossible. A small change can only... if you're at a minimum, then the small changes can only increase your output. If you're at a maximum, small changes only decrease. So the biggest value of this is that it helps us think about things. Helps us figure out how to optimize stuff, for example. And we'll talk more about that next time. So we're doing lots of derivatives. If necessary, of course, go back and review the regular old derivative rules from chapter 10 about when you just had one input. Because if you're forgetting something about those derivative rules, then the problem arises again here. Here's something from economics where there's two inputs. So that's just a Greek letter alpha. For reasons of tradition, that they use a Greek letter here. So this is called a Cobb-Douglas production function. It's a nice little example. Where partial derivatives can come up and why you would actually want a function of two variables. And usually there's another positive constant. How do I call it? Capital A. So it'll look something like this. You'll have the model says you take some constant times a power, power say alpha, of how much capital you have. This could be measured in dollars or whatever, right? The value, the present value of all your equipment, your brand recognition, your intellectual property, anything that you have that helps make you more productive. And then L is your labor, so how many man hours are we putting into this project? There's some gray areas, like does the education of your workers count as capital, or is part of the labor term? But it's just a simple model. It's not going to capture all the complexities of the real world. Now, why do they have this weird thing of power alpha for one of the inputs, capital, and power 1 minus alpha for one of the other inputs, labor? Okay, the reason it's done that way is because they want what's called constant returns to scale. The idea is you imagine some corporation has got, maybe it's got a factory, lots of equipment, it's got lots of workers. Then you imagine you cloned it. So there was another factory identical to it, identical equipment, identical workers. What would you expect the production to be after you made a clone of it? You expect it to be twice as much, right? Okay, so you want, if you double K and you double L, the idea is that should double the production. And that's why these powers have to add up to 1. If you factor out the powers of 2 there, you get 2 to the alpha times 2 to the 1 minus alpha, which will just be 2. So the first part here, I just factored out another copy of the original output y, and then here I just have 2 to the 1. So that's called constant returns to scale. It's a model. Not everything in the world is modeled by that. There are some situations where there's increasing returns to scale because there's... Maybe if you get a larger group of people together, they can work more efficiently because they can. You can have people specialize in narrower tasks, and they can get better at that narrow task. But this is not just used for firms. This can be used for entire economies, a whole country. And then it may be more plausible that there's only that if you just double the population and double the corresponding amount of infrastructure and technology, that the economic output, the GDP, will just double as opposed to triple or something. Okay, so let's say that we have... E.g., so for example, so A is 10, alpha is 0.4. Okay. Then you'd have Y is 10 times K to the 0.4 times L to the 0.6. And in economics, they talk about marginal this, marginal that. What I learned right away when I took economics was that marginal means derivative or differential. And when there's multiple inputs, it means partial derivative. So, for example, the marginal product of labor
It just, it's just their long-winded way of saying a partial derivative. Right? Production is y, labor is l, so the marginal product of labor is partial y, partial l. Marginal product of capital. Okay. It's just partial y, partial k. Economics, marginal is just partial derivative. You can actually find the form, those, right? Just use the power rule, say. What would it be, for example, this one? Okay, so hold the capital constant and then use the power rule for this part. So 0.6 minus 1 will be negative 0.4. A few problems let you practice with the partial derivatives. There are many, many more problems in section 15.2. The odd numbered ones have the answers in the back. I have the answers to the even ones if you want to ask me about one of those. But I can make up some problems here easily. I can make up a function and ask you to take some derivatives or do a linear approximation on it, things like that. Okay, so let's say f of xyz is x cubed y minus y squared over z squared minus xz. What I want you to do? I want you to find the partial derivatives. At, say, there's another one. G of xy equals
x cubed times the square root of y. Using base point 2, 4, and applying the linear approximation of G at .03, 3.9. And then finally, here's a little Cobb-Douglas production function. This homework's not due for a while. This is due on the last class day. It's the older homeworks that are due this Thursday.